All right, here we are starting Super Tatis for Parshas Vayera. I've got a couple of stories to start with today. First one is on Afer Ve'efer. So Avraham Avinu says, Va'anochi Afer Ve'efer. There's a story about Erev Yom Kippur where Rav Yonasan Ivshitz is near some guy, a chashev guy. He's davening very, very intently. And when he got to Afarani v'chayai kal v'chomer b'misosi, he raised his voice and he cried and he made it really feel like he was committed to the concept that he was afar v'efer. The only problem is the next day he got called up for revi'i, and when the gabbai called him up, he got upset with the gabbai and he kind of yelled at him. He said, "Aren't you embarrassed? You know, you called this guy up," he pointed to the guy he gave Shlishi. "You called this guy up for Shlishi, this young Avreich, and you didn't call me, and you called me up for Ravi'i?" So, obviously, this Afar Ve'efer thing seemed to have gone away. So, Rav Yonasan Ivshitz goes up to him and he says, "Hey, yesterday I heard you davening and how much you were Afar Ve'efer mamish. Why are you getting upset about this kavod? You got Ravi'i on Yom Kippur." And he said, "When I said that, that was for davening. When compared to Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm Avar Ve'efer. When compared to that Avreich, I'm definitely chashev, 10 times as chashev as this person." So I don't know exactly what to make of this story aside from a good laugh. But I think that it does highlight the fact that people are able to say extremely holy things with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and daven and say very wonderful things, and that is excellent. And sometimes it's aspirational because it doesn't seem to pan out with the way that they deal with their Beino L'Chavero. I'm not necessarily criticizing it as much as observing that it is harder to substantiate being the person that you posture as when you're talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam who is not directly talking back than when you have real-time feedback. And that's an important thing for us to work on, generating that sort of level of consistency. The famous Sefer Churim HaSholosh says it's a story brought by Rav Nosson Adler about the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer had a piece of wood, and that piece of wood was used for a ismil, used for a bris milah by the Chassam Sofer. And that was kind of the handle. And the way the Mesorah went is that wood actually came from Elone Mamre, and it was that very special tree that Avram Avinu said, "Vihi she'anu tachas ha'etz," said, you know, he says, "Go rest under that tree." This was from that tree. So the Chassam Sofer was a moel, and he took that wood and he used it to make a handle for a ismil that they used for bris milah. And he used it for all these brises, and it was really remarkable because he seemed to have a lot of bracha, and he never seemed to ever have any mistakes or anything else. The way the story goes is that after the Chassam Sofer passed on, one of the museums in England somehow purchased this ismil. And on the way to the museum, the ismil was burned. So it completely burned, was no longer available. The way some people explain this story is that, you know, holy items like this don't belong in museums. They belong elsewhere. They belong to be cherished, but they're not something to be looked at as an artifact. And obviously that's the subject of a lot of discussion, but, you know, the critical point that I would make is that we need our connection to all of these stories in our Mesorah to be one that is not sterile and academic, but it needs to be something which is emotional and vibrant and alive. So that's that story. Is a very nice piece, an idea that came out from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that I thought was very nice. When a guest came to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and they were, you know, trying to fix up a meal for them, as they say, an appropriate meal, sometimes it takes a little bit of time, and whoever you're hosting might be hungry, and they might be uncomfortably hungry. So it is important, said Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, to put a little something in front of them to snack on, and after that to prepare the meal, and not to just rush to prepare the meal. And we can see that that's what Avram Avinu did, because he said, "Ve'chapas lechem v'sa'adu levavchem." First, I'll give you a little bit of bread. You get your appetite wet and you're a little bit satiated, whatever. V'achar kach v'labakar ratz Avram. Then he ran to start getting the meal ready. So I think that that's just a lesson for us. Al pi midos, that it's important for us to be thoughtful. That somebody may be too ravenous to wait for a giant meal, you put a little something in front of them, and then see how they respond. This is also especially relevant for parents of young children or wives of husbands who come home from work, or you know, anywhere in between where somebody comes home hangry. You know, it is a wise move to feed all of these creatures before we start interacting with them in too material of a way. Because they could be coming home hungry, and if they're coming home hungry, sometimes hungry means hangry, and sometimes hangry means grouchy, and we don't want any of that. This story shows up in a kind of a variety of places, but we have this Rashi that says that, but when it says that Hashem pakadas Sarah, it says that, you know, she and Avram Davin for Avimelech, so they were netchila, and there's this whole idea when anybody davins for their friend and they need the same thing, they're going to be answered first. So the problem is that this became something that became kind of a ritualistic practice where people began davening for their friends, so they would get their things, and it became a back door. It's a machlokes. I saw, I believe it's some sofer, on the one hand, who seem to think that it has to be L'Shem Shamayim, and there's a letter from Rabbi Akiva Eger to somebody else seeming to say that, you know, they accepted the practice as a backdoor. But whatever had happened in Antwerp, there was a question that came to Rav Chaim Kreisvort, and he was the Av Beis Din, and there was somebody who had been davening and davening for somebody else, and they didn't get what they want. So he said, why didn't this school of work? And he says, the truth is, you should know, this school of really does work when you're davening for somebody else. But really, your kavana was for yourself. If your kavana is for yourself, and you end up davening for somebody else for your kavana for yourself, that really doesn't. That's eino maila ve'eino morid. It's not going to get you anywhere. So that's the idea, is that what this is trying to engender is not chicanery, but it's supposed to be engendering the idea that we should be thinking of other people, and other people who are thinking about other people tend to find favor in the eyes of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Next, the Yair Alev Hashem El Avram, and he's sitting Elonei Mamre. So the question is, with respect to that, Rashi says he was with Aner Eshkol and Mamre. And they had a bris, and they were all buddies, and he was notel etza al hamila. He asked for etza with respect to the bris mila. Now, I'm not sure if we have full public records on this, but I think Avram Avinu was the first person to get a bris mila. So to ask for etza on a bris mila of three people who have not personally adopted this practice, and who had not yet personally, seemingly, adopted monotheism, sounded like it was a fait accompli to get one answer. Question is, why would Avraham Avinu do it? Avraham is going to seek Eitzah, and the Mizrahi asks his questions. It seems, the Maharal says, what you could say is that Avraham Avinu didn't want it to seem like he was acting impulsively. He didn't want to seem like he was doing it under duress. He didn't want to make it seem that he had a temporary bout with insanity. Is that he wanted to make sure that it was on the record when he would go do a bris mila. He was doing it because he believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he believed in the principles and the cause that he was espousing. So he was going to ask other people who he knew would be naysayers, dafka. He gave them an opportunity to persuade him not to do it, and then he did it anyway, because he had heard what had happened, and had decided that it was something he could not do, or he would not listen to them. So I think that's an important thing to mention. Also, he mentions that this was the same idea with respect to the Akedah. By Akedas Yitzchak, it says that, you know, he had a three-day lapse in between when he was told and when the Akedah actually happened. The same thing is allowing Avraham Avinu to have 72 hours to premeditate this practice. It wasn't an act of passion. It wasn't an act of impulse. It wasn't an act of temporary insanity. Avraham Avinu had conversations about it. He had to speak with Yitzchak about it. He had to think about it. He had to sleep on it three times. And because of that, nobody could claim that Avraham Avinu was acting rashly. We knew that he acted b'midah v'mishkal mechuvan. And that's a very important thing, especially when you are the father of a new monotheistic movement. So I will make one comment, is that we have a little bit of a choli in this world right now, where people are self-selecting in terms of who they listen to and who they talk to. And they're very, very afraid of somebody who just might see something even the slightest bit different than themselves. And they don't realize that if you listen to somebody else's position and you strengthen in your resolve and you say, Afal Pichain, this is what I think is right to do, then it could make your position stronger. That's certainly what happened with Avraham Avinu, and it could be part of our lives as well. Next, after the initial piece of the Akedah, something strange happens. Is that the Malach Kadosh Baruch Hu says, the Malach calls out. He says, don't do anything. Al taslo ma'uma, al tishlach yadcha lanar. So Avraham Avinu stops, but he says, wait a minute, hold on, I came here for nothing, says Rashi. Chinam basi lakon, ese bo chabala. Let me give him a nick. Ve'otzi mimenu ma'at dam. Let me take out a little bit of blood. So why does he want to do that? Kadosh Baruch Hu said, don't do anything. So the Maskil of David said, well, this is the place where the Mikdash is going to be, and we could say, Miktas dam ke miktas anefesh, and Miktas Nefesh, Kechola Nefesh. Okay, fine. I mean, we could try to do a little bit. Netziv says maybe this is like, what we do as a Tipas Dam Bris, somebody who is already circumcised but needs a Bris Mila. We just take a drop of blood. The Ksave Kabbalah says that no, it's completely different. He's just wanted to be Mekayim, wanted to fulfill what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. And I believe I once saw, in the name of Rav Volba, that he said, I don't really want to hurt my son. It's just that I wish I could have done the Kiddush Hashem that that could have occurred had I had this opportunity. Last thing, a shlo about the Akedah. He says, we learn that we should have Mesiras Nefesh to Kadosh Baruch Hu for anything. We learn this from Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was willing, he was willing to, it was a complete Mesiras Nefesh for his child and all of his future. So even more so if it's just a little bit of discomfort, breaking a taiva, getting up early to learn Torah or to daven, or to just not follow, some of our pleasure-seeking tendencies, trying to waste time in the way that we speak. What are we going to do? We're going to subordinate whatever will we have and prioritize the Kadosh Baruch Hu's. And that a person will think if they had an Aveira or a mitzvah, they should think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is testing them and see whether or not They will do the right thing, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu tested Avram Avinu. And indeed, if a person knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was testing them right then, they would be extraordinarily punctilious. Therefore, a person should think any time an opportunity comes to their hand, because really this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving me a gift. He's giving me an opportunity to be tested. Then he ends off his words with, Ashrei Adam Shehashem Elokav Tamid B'machshav Aso, and praiseworthy is the person that's a Kadosh Baruch Hu always on their mind. Thinking question, I guess, could be the one about number two of the Rashi, since I don't have time to do the one that was in the email, but anybody who'd like to see the email, it is there. Yasher Koach.